Well, we are in our, fifth week. We're going to end this next week. You could probably make up a series of your own, right? All the essential life apps that followers of Jesus need to have in their life. I tried to pick ones that maybe weren't ones that were not as familiar to us. and I don't mean familiar that we've never heard them, but that maybe we haven't preached. I don't think I'd ever really preached a message on rest. I don't think I'd ever really preached a message like that on confession. And today I'm going to preach on something that I've never remember preaching on. And we're going to talk about the Trust app. And let me first of all ask you just to kind of prep this a little bit. how many of you have ever purchased a treadmill or some kind of exercise equipment, ever joined a health club, or read at least part of a book about some kind of diet? How many of you? Okay, there's 100%. All right. So you remember when, if it was a gym, remember when you toured the gym, and remember when they were showing you, okay, here's the pool, here's the, you know, where you can run, this is where the ellipticals are, the, you know, all these kind of machines, they're giving you the whole kind of tour. Or maybe when the exercise equipment was delivered and they're setting it up and all of that, you know, and you're in the pantry, going in there and going, okay, I got to get rid of this stuff and this stuff and this stuff. And the kids are going, oh, man, what are we going to eat? You know, all that. Do you know what you felt in that moment? You felt healthier. Didn't you just feel healthier? I mean, right? You're going around taking the tour and you just already, I think I like panic. That's probably... That's so much better. But yeah, you know, you felt healthier. You just felt better, you know. And let me ask you, at that point, when that equipment is being delivered or you're reading that nutrition book, were you actually healthier? Not a trick question. No, you weren't any healthier. Why? Because application makes all the difference, doesn't it? So you're joining the gym, reading the nutrition books, you know, whatever. In fact, you got into your exercise clothes and you got in front of the mirror, right? And you said, I'm already thinner, you know, because they're so tight and everything, you know, right? It's like, I'm already there. Yeah, so the fact of the matter is that application is what makes all the difference. And I see people go to the gym that I go to who come in and just kind of sit around. You know, there's TVs and stuff. They sit there and then they walk out. They don't even exercise. And I'm sure they walk away feeling healthier, thinking, man, I went to the gym, you know. missed one little section of the visit there, but, you know, I'm sure they felt healthier. But they're not. They weren't healthier. Why? Because application makes all the difference. Now, this may surprise you, those of you who know me best, but I actually like... And it's usually a comical kind of thing, but I like to look at hardware stores. I like to go in the hardware store. We have a little hardware store. I do, really do. I know, yeah, those of you who know me are laughing. I like looking at tools and gadgets and stuff, and I'll pick up something. I'll go, man, this would really be cool to have. And Cindy will go, you'll kill yourself. You would hurt somebody. There's no way. You don't even know what to do with that, but it just looks neat. You know what I mean? And it plugs in. It's got a battery detached. It's awesome. But I like looking at all that stuff and looking at wood. I dream of, like, putting something together with wood. That'd be so neat, just wood. But now, Cindy's really the handy person in our family, and she's really much, and I'm being serious, she's much handier than I am. But you know what we do sometimes? We'll look at stuff, and we got these projects we're thinking, and it could be as simple as replacing, you know, a smoke detector or some kind of thing we need to replace, or sprinklers, whatever. And we'll go to the hardware store, and we'll buy stuff. And, of course, we get home, and we found that we're buying stuff that we already have, and then we've forgotten some of the stuff that we really need. And so we've gone through all over, and if it's a big place... You know, we did this, you know, during Christmas time, we were looking through the hardware store. But if it's a big place, you know, it's quite a, you know, exercise. You get home, you got the bag, you kind of put it on the workbench, and then you go in, because, you know, it's, well, you know, you feel like some lunch. Then you're kind of tired, you really don't feel like it, and you get kind of distracted with something else. And every day as I go to my car, there's these little plastic bags on my workbench that represent, you know, little things that I should be doing and fixing and whatever, you know. And there's this kind of euphoria that something's going to get built, something's going to get fixed, something's going to be better, it's going to be safer, it's going to be improved. And the truth of it is, it's not. It's not any safer. It's not any better. It's not improved. Why? I know. Now, ladies, I didn't tell that illustration for you. Now, some of you, I can already see. You're already getting ideas. Yeah, that's right. See what the pastor's saying? It's not the point of it. The truth of it is, what's the big point here? Application makes all the difference. And so that's really a key thing. In the world of church, in the world of spiritual life, in the world of following Jesus, in all of that, you could just say in religion, I hate to put it that way, I don't even like that word, but there's a same kind of dynamic that's at play there. You come to church, you feel convicted, you feel inspired, you feel like you got an answer to a question, maybe, or you feel better, and when you've got those feelings in church, you feel like, I'm making progress. You know, I have these feelings. You know, I'm moving forward, and you're not. You might come to church and be bored, for example. You know, on a scale of 1 to 10, maybe usually you're bored at about a 5, but today, you know, it's particularly boring, and it's a 7, you know, and it's like you're sitting there, you think, I must be getting extra credit with God because I'm enduring this for God because he's, you know, it's so boring, and I'm, you know, wow, you know, this is so, I got to be getting extra credit. Certainly, you know, and you've endured all that. You feel like there's something happening, but it hasn't happened. Maybe you actually sang for the first time. They were singing the songs, and you know, maybe you started, hey, singing, and maybe there was a slow one. You even got a little choked up, and we feel like that was such a spiritual experience that, wow, you know, surely something real, something authentic is happening inside of me in my relationship with God. But it really hasn't. What's true about home improvement projects, what's true about exercise equipment, nutrition book, and all of that stuff. And by the way, I'm not trying to say the Holy Spirit doesn't move us and guide us to make decisions. But he does just that. He guides us to make decisions. But application makes all the difference. Because when you do apply truth from God's word, when you do apply biblical principles, you obey God, and your obedience and expression of faith intersects with God's faithfulness to us and what he said, when that happens, something happens inside of you, and then you make some progress. So simply believing, us simply singing, us simply listening, us simply feeling is not real progress, is it? And yet in the church world, you know, sometimes we can pat ourselves on the back. Wow, you know, I endure church. You know, we give ourselves some credit. But Jesus taught, and also James, the brother of Jesus, taught that it's what you do with what you hear that makes all the difference. So in this Life App series, we decided to come up with 5. There's probably a lot more. But I wanted to give 5, and I really wanted these to be relational. But let's just review really quickly what they are. First of all, number one, of course, there was the idea that application makes all of the difference. The second week, we looked at the application of forgiveness. The application of forgiveness. Forgiven people forgive. Forgiven people forgive. We see that the Lord said that. We see that in the Lord's Prayer, right? The third app we looked at was the app of confession. And what we saw is that genuine confession leads to genuine change. Last week, I hypocritically preached about rest. I admitted it to you, so I guess, and I know we're on this journey. And but we found that our lives move to a better place when we live our life at a sustainable pace. Today we're going to talk about the Life App of trust. And what's unique about this, I've talked about trusting in God, trusting a lot, but I've never talked about us trusting in each other, in us trusting in people. Trust in your home, trust at work, trust with your friends, maybe even trust with the government. And so I want to talk about trust because it's very, very much misunderstood. In fact, the verses that we'll look at are kind of those verses we tend to read right straight through. They're very familiar. And so we read right straight through them and keep going and don't really stop. But we're going to slow down, look at a section, and we're going to look at these because in 4 little phrases, Paul, the Apostle Paul in the Bible, draws us to an extremely important idea of the value of trust. Now, before we do that, what we know experientially, all of us know this, and I'll tell you, so much of my counseling is around this idea, is that our relationships are no stronger than the amount of trust that we have. Our relationships, whether at home, whether at work, you could even say this in a relationship with God, you know, are no stronger than the amount of trust that we have in those relationships. Trust is the bedrock of relationships. In fact, in anticipation of the series, I really wanted to come up with five that were relational, that we could apply, obviously in our spiritual life, but also really apply to each other. And here's what I've learned. If you can't trust, if you don't know how to trust, and if you're not willing to take some risks when it comes to trust, you'll never really fully be engaged relationally. And there will always be something lacking. Now, before we look at this passage too, there's a couple things I also want to point out that are really important. And that is, there's two things that really make it hard for us to trust. Two general areas. And the first thing is what you see makes it hard for you to trust. The second thing that makes it very hard for us is who you are. Now, somebody said that they're going to do something, they didn't do it. I saw that they didn't do it. I observed, I experienced that they didn't follow through. They didn't keep their promise. And when I see that, it makes it hard for me to trust somebody else, you know. And that's the easy part. But what kind of makes it hard to trust is also who you are. You grew up in some kind of home. And I put quotes around that because some of you say, well, no, I grew up in an orphanage, or I grew up, you know, I was with, you know, in this situation or that situation. Perhaps you had a very bad experience. Maybe even in your life up till this point, maybe you look back and you had a bad experience with an ex, you know, a spouse, an ex, or an in-law, or a step-parent, or a bad experience in your former occupation with a former boss or with a former company you worked for, something. And something happened over time, something in your heart, and you, in a sense, you learn not to trust. So this trust app is actually more difficult for you. Because in general, you have a hard time trusting. But as Christians, as believers, we are called upon by God to learn to trust. Trust bends. Love bends. And God has called us to do that. Now, 2 days ago was Valentine's Day, right? So all of you, right, had a great day 2 days ago. Wonderful. And so thinking of that, knowing that it was going to be close to Valentine's Day, I thought I would share from probably one of the absolutely most familiar passages in all of the Bible. It's probably the most familiar chapter in the Bible. It's 1 Corinthians 13. It's sometimes called the love chapter. Love, it's exciting and new. You may have, 1 Corinthians 13, you may have had, in fact, you may not even knew it was in the Bible when you got married. You may have had part of this read at your wedding. Probably doing weddings, it's the most familiar or most common chapter to read. Why? Because it gives us a description of what true love is. And so it's called the love chapter. And again, you may be very familiar with it. I say that you remember when you with your wedding, but, you know, so much of that's a blur. You ever try to think about what happened at your wedding? You know, 24 years ago, it's like, I have a pretty decent memory, but that, it's like, I can remember a few things. But it's like, so yeah, 24 years tends to do that to you. But who read what? What did they say? I don't know. but I'm sure glad it happened, that's for sure. And, you know, we're going to discuss love, but we're going to test this trust app, but we're going to discuss love, right? Because I want to know what love is, don't you? And I want you to show me. So, you know, okay, little foreigner reference. There we go. And I'm dating myself. I'm really dating myself here. Okay. Paul says, you want to know what love is? I'll tell you what love is. I'm going to give you a description. And he runs into this issue of trust. And I'm sure he knows that people are going to think, what? This sounds pretty extreme. This sounds pretty radical. So let's read these verses that lead up to the big what, the big gasp when it comes to trust. And most of this we're going to be saying, yeah, of course. Oh, yeah, sure. Oh, yeah, I know that. And then we're going to have a couple spots where we're going to have some bumps in the road here. But look at this in 1 Corinthians 13. And by the way, you probably have already discovered that there's some notes for you. Those of you who enjoy taking notes, 3-pager today. Okay, that's just my gift, my way of saying I love you. So those of you who it feels like work, just leave it in the bulletin and it'll be fine. But 1 Corinthians 13, it'll of course be all displayed for you here. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 4 says, love is patient, of course, yes. Love is kind, yeah, oh yeah. It does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud, we got all of that. It does not dishonor others, of course, everybody knows that. It's not self-seeking, it's not easily angered, of course. It keeps no record of wrongs. Oh, wait a minute. Any of you, some of you may be married to a person with a file cabinet, right? On May 13th, 1992, you know what you did? You did that again. Well, you're right. So hopefully, but real love doesn't keep a file cabinet. Real love doesn't even keep a 3x5 card, by the way. True love keeps no record of wrongs. And we should probably come back and talk about that sometime. Huh? Now he starts to focus in on his big idea. Verse 6. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. He's talking about evil in general, by the way. Love isn't trying to catch somebody doing something wrong. It's, you saw, I'm going to go through this quick. Huh? Now I could do that, and I'll be okay. Thanks, my friend. It keeps no record of wrongs. It does not delight in evil, but rejoices in the truth. Love isn't trying to catch somebody doing something wrong. Yeah, I knew you were going to do that. I thought you would do that. I knew you were going to be late. I thought when I gave you that project you were going to mess that up. I knew you weren't going to give me credit for that. I just knew it when it, you know, I knew it. I was just waiting to catch you doing the wrong thing. And the Bible says love isn't like that. That's not love. He says that's not how love operates. Love is looking for an opportunity to catch people doing the right thing. And then Paul gives us four quick phrases that all are pointing to this one idea of trust. Here's how he talks about love. It always. Sometimes in counseling I'll say, don't use always and never. God says, hey, there are some things that are always. Love, it always protects. It always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres, always, seriously? I mean, that seems pretty extreme. And Paul's going, yes, if you think that's really extreme, you got the right idea. You understand what I'm saying. If you're going, always? Come on, always? Come on, love. Yeah, okay, we try. We do our best, too. But always? The truth of the matter is Paul's saying, look, love bends. Love leans into. Love looks for an opportunity to give the other person the benefit of the doubt. Love looks for that opportunity. So consequently, it always is trying to protect the integrity of the relationship, even if you have to do all of the work. And I've watched some of you go through relationship situations where you really were carrying the weight of the whole thing. And yet, constantly staying and saying, always trusting. I'm just going to do everything I can to trust. Always hope, not giving up. It perseveres, going to bend in your direction. Another translation says this, New American Standard says this, love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Now, let me give you just three statements, okay? So we're talking a little bit about love and how this relates us to trust and kind of a summary of this whole idea of what we just read. And then we'll talk specifically, how does that relate to us? How can we live this out? And here's what Paul's saying about love as it relates to trust. Number one, he says, love gives the other person the benefit of the doubt. Love gives that other person the benefit of the doubt. When there's a dilemma, there's a discrepancy between what's promised and what actually happened, love gives the other person the benefit of the doubt. The second thing that we can take as a summary statement here is love looks for the most, and I love this word, love looks for the most generous explanation for the other person's behavior. Now, sometimes there's a disconnect between what is promised and what actually happens, right? My kid said this, but did this. My spouse said this, but did this. You know, my boss said this, but did this. I'm going to put something in that space that's that gap between what was promised and what was experienced. And love says, before jumping to any conclusions, before, you know, making some assumptions, consider some other possibilities. Love looks for a generous explanation. The third statement we could probably pull from this is this, is that love chooses trust over suspicion. It applies to marriage, but this principle applies to a lot of different relationships. It really applies to a lot of things. It could be at work, it could be in your neighborhood, if you're a coach, it could be at work, even the government. If you're fraternity, sorority, you think about, you know, any kind of relationship, there's expectations. And then there's what we actually experience. Now, you've had situations where you've perhaps gone to a location and maybe it has exceeded your expectations and you're delightfully surprised. And some of you have seen hotels or something on a website and think, look how beautiful it is. And then you realize, wow, it's about the same size as it was on the website. You know, right? And it's like, oh, that wasn't quite as much fun as I thought it was going to be. But in our relationships, this happens too. What do you do? Here's what actually, you know, you promised. Here's what you actually did. Here's when you said you'd be home. Here's when you actually got home. Here's what you said about that project, and here's what you did about that project. So here's there's a list of things that we've agreed on, and here's part of the list you did or didn't do. And every relationship, experiences at one time or another this gap, right? Every relationship has this happen. There's this gap, and we're going to talk about that. Sometimes, and here's really what the gap is, sometimes there's a gap between what we expect and what we experience. What we expect and what we experience. If you don't get anything else out of this message, try to embrace this simple truth, these few points here. Because you've had this happen. And you may have the most wonderful marriage or the most wonderful friendship or the most wonderful job situation. There's going to be those times when there's this gap with what you expect and what you experience are different. But try to really understand this. This is the hard part. This is where it bites a little bit. Number two, when there is a gap, we choose what goes in that gap. That's the key. We decide what goes in the gap. In the midst of the experience, we think, no way. Well, I didn't decide what goes in that gap. They decided, you know. Hey, he said that he was going to be home at 8:00, and I hear the garage door go open at 10. So they've forced me to assume the worst. The truth is, no one but you controls what goes into that gap. You heard somebody say, they made me mad. Now, people know buttons to push. They know our sensitive areas. Of course they do. Especially when you live with somebody long enough, obviously. But the truth of it is, I have to make that choice. I make the choice. The truth is, no one but you controls what you put in that gap between expect and experience. And that's why Paul says here, when it comes to love, when it comes to the bedrock of great relationships, friendships, dating, marriage, work relationships, you need to understand, love bends. Love does everything it can to protect the integrity of that relationship. So love goes out of its way to believe the best. Because that's what we can, basically the two pendulum swings. We can assume the worst or we can believe the best. That's our options. Love understands that we choose what goes in that gaps. And there's gaps in every relationship. Again, raising kids, there are gaps, right? You've talked about them cleaning that room 100 times, right? If you're married, you've talked about that budget 100 times. You know, we all agree, and now it's happening, and there's this gap. But I thought we said, I thought we agreed we were only going to spend this much money on clothes. I thought we agreed that we were going to go on this kind of a vacation. I thought we agreed that you weren't going to spend time with him because we both agreed that he was a bad influence on you. And next thing I know, you're off having lunch and playing golf. And I thought we agreed, and so forth. Gaps. There's gaps at home. There are gaps at work. Hey, you both thought that you were going to be presenting this idea jointly. This was a team effort. And the next thing you know, somebody else is taking credit for your idea. And you thought, you agreed, hey, this is what, you know, I need to be paid for this particular job. And they write you a check for a whole lot less. And you knew that, hey, this is what was agreed. I'm going to get commission, this much commission. And they found a loophole. And suddenly now, you're not getting what you expected. And there's a gap in these relationships. Nationally. Talk about politics. Ripping politics. I mean, that's like a national pastime, right? If you're a Republican, you think all the Democrats are idiots, right? And if you're a Democrat, you think all the Republicans are idiots. And we love to blame. It's not fun to blame. It's kind of nice because we really don't feel it. We could blame the Congress and blame the president and blame. You know, it doesn't really affect us much. You know, those stupid Republicans, those dumb Democrats. You know, we play this game. It's like a sport. And when there's a gap that what we expect, and then what we experience, we choose what we put in that gap. In other words, you have far more power in deciding how this goes than you anticipate, really. And Paul says, love is always looking for the opportunity to believe the best. See, at weddings, we read through that real quick. I think that's why pastors don't preach on this very much, because it's so familiar. We believe all things, hope all things, endure all things. Yeah, okay, love never fails. And we want to get to that. Faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is, and that's, you know, there's the climax. And we forget, wait a second, see what Paul's saying here? This is the Bible. And what's interesting in research, and I remember reading this years ago, doing some studying for counseling and all of these, my counseling courses. But a huge tip, in healthy relationships, both parties go to ridiculous extremes to believe the best. That's what research shows. People say love is blind, and Paul would say, in a sense, but actually you're seeing more. You're seeing potential like you never seen before. Amy mentioned that as she was sharing. God sees the potential in us like we never see in ourselves, and that's what God's wanting us to do with each other. As followers of Christ, as brothers and sisters in Christ, as husbands and wives, as friends, and whatever, we believe all things, protect at all costs, endure all things, always believe, always trust. But at the end of the day, there's nothing, think about this, there's nothing really gained by refusing to trust, is there? There really isn't. And here's why. Suspicion is an expression of rejection. Suspicion is an expression of rejection. When you feel like I don't trust you and I'm suspicious of everything you're doing, and why are you sitting next to her? And why did you call him? And why did you text him? And why didn't you come to my office first? And why didn't you tell me about this project? What didn't you tell me about that? And why is the room not made up? And what, right? All of these things. Why? When you feel I'm suspicious of you, you experience that. And I experience that as rejection. Do you know what we do in relationships when we feel rejected? We refuse to open up. We close down. Closing, right? Commercial. That's a big reason why we are having community groups being started. We all need a place where we can be safely in an environment where people care about us enough, we trust each other enough, we believe in each other enough, we love each other enough to be able to say, hey, here's where I'm at. I don't want to be here. This is where I'm at. This is my life. And pray for me, help me. That's so important. Okay, end of commercial. But the truth of it is we need that to be able to be open like that. God designed us. God designed us as acceptance magnets. We're drawn to environments and drawn to relationships where we feel accepted. We see that in our kids. You know, we can look back at third and fourth grade, whether we're accepted or not accepted, and we kind of look back at that experience and we think, oh, wow, nothing's changed. Suspicion communicates rejection. So consequently, when we choose, and remember, it's our choice. It's my choice. When we choose to assume the worst, even if you're right, okay, even if you've got a long list of why you should assume the worst, anytime you communicate, I don't trust you, you've taken a step in closing down that relationship. You're no longer protecting it at all costs, no longer enduring at all costs, no longer bending because love bends. And you say, but wait a minute, isn't there just a lack of integrity in that? And I'll deal with that in just a moment. But it's an extraordinarily powerful thing to communicate. I really want to trust you. That's way better than I'm pulling out the file drawer, right? I got some things I remember. You did it again. And you may be exactly right. But it's far different than saying, you know what? I really, really want to trust you. Now, I know what some of you may be thinking. Because some of you may be thinking, yeah, but if I could tell you my sad story, if I could tell you, you know, in fact, Pastor David, if I could come up and tell a story, I would wreck your whole sermon right here. People would be going, yeah, what about that, huh? That would, what did he just say? Well, you know, what? So, hey, let me just say this. You know, hey, I could tell you about my father-in-law. I could tell you about my brother-in-law. I could tell you about my family vacation. If I told you about my 14-year-old son, well, yeah, right? Well, we all have those stories. We've all got those. And I'll address that. But please don't lose sight of one important thing. No matter how bad it is, no matter how wide or how, how frequent that gap is, we choose. We choose. That's why God gave us 1 Corinthians 13. Footnote, he didn't give it to us just for weddings. God said, go ahead and try this at home. You know, it works really good in a ceremony, but it's even better if you live this stuff. It's really great. So we choose what we put in that gap every single time. Nobody has forced you to assume the worst. They can't. It is within your power to choose what goes in that gap. And our best shot, our best chance at restoring and healing and making a stronger relationship is always to believe the best. Now, I've never heard anyone say, you know, it's an amazing thing. Things at work were so tense. I mean, between my boss and I, everything was just so tense and oh, it was awful. And then he came into my office and he told me that he didn't trust me. And everything's just turned around and is so much better now. I've never heard anybody say, yeah, my wife and I, we really weren't, you know, it was really like this. And finally she just said, you know, I don't trust you anymore. And wow, everything just soared. Got all romantic. Right? Doesn't ever happen that way. When we communicate, even when we deserve to communicate, I don't trust you, we begin to shut down that relationship. Because suspicion or that lack of trust is rejection, and we all flee from rejection. Paul says, look, I know this sounds extreme. And you say, does it really sound extreme? Just remember, always, always, always. That's incredible. You know, that's pretty amazing. So yeah, Paul, are you kidding? I mean, it doesn't sound practical. But even in the most difficult of situations, difficult of relationships, he says, love bends, always believes, always hopes, always endures. It always trusts. Do everything in your power to communicate, I trust you. Now, what happens when you can't? Some of you may be sitting in situations or have had situations. What happens when over and over and over that gap keeps getting wider and wider and it just consistently is a gap? You know, and you've done everything you can. You say, hey, I've bent back so far. I'm, you know, on the other side. Now, when I tell you what you're supposed to do, you're going to think, that's so obvious. I can't even believe you made a blank for it. You know, seriously. But the problem is we know it. But we don't do it. And here it is. When you can't choose to trust, you have to choose to confront. When it's like, okay, I've bent all I can bend, and I'm about to break. I mean, I've been feeling like a fool for a long time, but hey, I've been putting up with this for years, some of you may say. But now, and here's something amazing. Most of our lives, we don't have things 1, 2, 3 in our lives. As a pastor, I like to preach that way. You know, number one, whatever. Number two, three. Here's 5 steps to the absolutely perfect life. That's just not the way it happens, right? It doesn't work with parenting. Here's 3 steps to being the perfect parent. 5 steps to having the perfect marriage. We like those. But here's the deal. Our life isn't really like that, is it? But what is really cool, and it's the only one I could think of. I could think of one where Paul does it in Corinthians, but only time I can think of where Jesus actually gives like a step one, step two, step three kind of situation where he says, okay, to handle this kind of situation here, number one, two, three, the only time is when it comes to confrontation. And he doesn't, I think I put it in your notes in Matthew 5, but especially in Matthew 18, he talks about four, you know, these steps rather to dealing with confrontation. And when you're going to confront somebody, you know, here's how you do it. He says, the Lord says, 1, 2, 3, here's confrontation. Because the Lord knows confrontation is a very necessary part of relationships. And for there to be healing and for the gap to be closed, there's a point in time where we're going to have to confront. Now, here's our problem. We don't confront, we gossip. I don't mind talking about the problem. I just don't want to talk about it to the person I've got the problem with, right? We don't talk to, we'd rather talk about. Isn't that much easier? I think that's a lot easier. And even if you don't talk about it, we have these kind of imaginary conversations, you know? I told that kid 100 times. I told that kid 100 times. I told that kid 100 times. Hi, sweetheart. How are you? Right? Okay, and I'm preaching it myself right now, you know. Man, I told... Cindy has said it to me sometimes. Why don't you tell them that, what you just told me? See? Right? Oh, my goodness. I told my wife, if he ever comes home, and then happy face, oh, dinner's ready, you know. And then we end up doing this whole thing, you know, the whole what's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong? Nothing. What's wrong? Nothing. What's wrong? Nothing. What's wrong? What's wrong? You know, what's wrong? Nothing. What's wrong? You say, why do we do that? Why do we say the what's wrong? Because when you're suspicious and when you're assuming the worst, that gets telegraphed, typically sometimes on your face. But what's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong? Nothing. What's wrong? Nothing. And then the earth starts to shake and the sheetrock starts to peel off. I'll tell you what's wrong, you know. You know. And then that's not pretty, is it? It's like, whoa, sorry I asked. What Jesus taught is what may, and what Jesus taught, what common sense tells us, and what some of you have discovered by experience, you know, school of hard knocks is this. The moment there's a gap, have a conversation. The moment there's a gap, have a conversation. And we're going to talk about how to do this and really kind of descriptively what confrontation is and how we can incorporate it. So let's talk about this in confrontation. See, confrontation, first of all, you know, what is it? Confrontation isn't yelling, screaming, you know, being angry. Confrontation is asking for an explanation and assuming there's a good one. Okay? All right? I'm not saying make stuff up. I'm not saying, you know, I'm not asking you because I don't trust you. I'm asking you because I'm assuming the best. But I'm not going to assume the best and make up some story in my mind to explain your behavior. You ever done this with people who treat you badly? I do this all the time. With people I don't know, who I don't really have a relationship with, it's like if they're, you know, at the grocery store, if they're mean or grumpy, I'll just, you know, probably their dog died this morning and they're, you know, whatever. Their kids ate poison, so they were in an emergency in the middle of the night. Or, you know, I just come up with these scenarios and it's like, oh, they're not such a bad person. They're just having a bad day. And it helps me. But in relationships, this doesn't work as well. You're assuming the best. I just want to hear an explanation. I'm sure there is one. You're an hour late, right? And that can make you mad. But hey, find out. Was it an accident? You know, was there illness, something? I'm assuming the best. I'm assuming the best and asking for an explanation. That's what real confrontation is. I want to know. And do you know what you're communicating? Here's what you're communicating when we confront that way. Number two, you're communicating, in this relationship, I want the door to stay open. I want the door to stay open in our relationship, in our marriage, in our friendship, and whatever the case might be. I'm going to do everything in my power to keep this relationship open. I'm believing the best. I'm not going to assume the worst. I'm protecting the relationship. I'm doing everything I can. I'm going to bend, but when I don't know, see, instead of having this imaginary conversation and trying to invent a scenario and then being mad at you because I'm just assuming you're being thoughtless and uncaring, instead of gossiping, I'm going to confront. Now, how many of you would say, David, I am not a confronter. I am not a good confronter. How many would you say that, okay? Okay, so you know, a number of you. I would be in that group too. Here's the good news, really. Some of you didn't raise your hand, but good news. Most people aren't. You're in the majority. There's only like 5 to 8% of people who really love to confront. I mean, you're like, oh, I was born for this. Yeah, oh, good, confrontation. Let's go. You know, I'll tell them. That's all bad. Number three there, I want you to see this. If you don't like confrontation, good news. You're going to be better at it. I mean, have you ever been confronted by someone who likes confrontation? Was that a happy time? No. I mean, right? Not only are they all steamed up, but they're bringing three witnesses and an attorney and a list and, you know, who knows what else, right? And it's like, oh, you know, I don't want to do that. I don't want to play anymore. So here's the good news. If you say, I just am not a confronter, and I would put myself in that. I'm not a confronter. You'll probably handle this perfectly. But you can't hide behind the fact that you don't like conflict. I mean, that's the truth of it. It's who likes conflict? That's, you know, that's another problem. But because if you let that gap stew, and you've learned this. Some of you have had this experience. I've had this experience. When you just keep that gap and think, oh, I'm just not going to mess with it, just let it, and you let it stew and simmer and build, what happens? That gap gets bigger and bigger, and the gulf gets deeper, and it gets more severe until finally something ugly happens. I mean, there's an explosion. And so turn this around. If there was somebody in your world, and you could think a friend, a coworker, if you thought somebody was sitting there thinking about you, I don't know why he does that. I'm not sure why he did that. I'm not sure why she made that decision. I don't know why she didn't tell me. You know, they're thinking that. Wouldn't you want them to come and tell you? Just say, hey, why? And you know this by experience too. You know what happens to way too often? When we go and confront somebody, what usually happens? This is what usually happens to me. I confront somebody and I've got all these thoughts and then I realize, oh, I didn't know that. Right? It's like, okay, now I get it. And they said, yeah, you should have just asked me. Yes, I should have asked you sooner. So to sum it up, in every relationship, expectations, in every relationship, something does and doesn't happen. Every time there's a gap, we've got to go. We've got to choose. We choose what we put in that gap, but we also choose to make that choice to go to them. And Paul says, to the uttermost, bend and believe the best. What does love do? Love trusts, always. When it's just too hard to give a generous explanation, you go quickly and directly to them. Now, here's what I know. Our church really is no better than our relationships. Think about it. That's what church is, right? It's not this building. I mean, we meet here, but you know what? The truth is, if something happened to this building, we had to meet someplace else, we'd still be church, right? Because it's all about relationships. And several years ago, I was given these five commitments, and actually what it came from is a church back east. They have a large staff, and they had these five commitments that they made to each other as a staff. And I thought, well, these apply not just to marriage or to a staff, but these apply to any relationship. These apply to a church. As the body of believers, we could make these commitments to each other. So these are just five commitments I want to suggest in applying this passage. Love always trusts. So here they are, really quickly. The first one is, when there's a gap between what I expected and what I experienced, I'm going to believe the best. I'm deciding ahead of time. I'm going to do that for you. As your pastor, I want you to know that. I believe in you. I believe the best about you. Okay? I am pre-deciding that even if you were to disappoint me, I'm going to give a generous explanation for your behavior. When you disappoint me, when you don't come through, when you said, hey, there's going to be 5 and it turns out to be 2. When you said you're going to be there at 8, you end up showing up at 9. Whatever it is, I'm pre-deciding to assume the best. Okay. Number 2, when other people assume the worst about you, I will come to your defense. Okay, I'm your shepherd. I believe in you. In other words, when you have a gap with somebody else and they're not handling it right and gossiping or whatever, I'll come to your defense. We can come to each other's defense. I'm going to say, hey, wait, you know there's probably a good explanation for this. You know, why are you assuming the worst about her? Why not just believe the best? I remember years and years ago, most of you don't know this, I had a person on staff, and whenever I was out of the office, I could be making a hospital call or whatever, they'd say, hey, where's Pastor David? He would say, I have no idea where he is. Or I have no idea what that guy's doing. And our relationship, staff-wise, had to kind of phase out. Okay, so he's no longer here. But it was, and it may have been age too, but all that to say, it was like, man, I would never do that to you. Just tell him, hey, I can get back to you. I'm not exactly sure where he is, but it was just like, I have no idea. He could be, probably out fishing or something. I don't know. He would say specifically, but it was like that came across. And it was like, man, let's assume that we're, reachable and we can help each other. And it was kind of crazy. But hey, if you're not good at this, this is where, hey, the whole political thing, practice with your political friends, okay? So you're there, and maybe your group, maybe if you're, let's say that you're a Republican, so you're with your Republican friends, and they start thrashing on the president, start thrashing on those Democrats because they're all idiots or whatever, and try this, because it really doesn't hurt much. Just say, maybe there's a different explanation. Okay, so you're going to be ostracized. They're not going to be your friends anymore. You probably have to become an independent, but... Okay, but it's much safer than trying it at home or work, right? But hey, assuming, I promise ahead of time, until the facts are otherwise, I'll come to your defense. Number 3, if what I experience begins to erode my trust, and that'll happen in your life, that will happen, I'll come directly to you. Husbands and wives, parents and kids, co-workers, whatever the case might be, when I feel like I want to trust them, but I really, really can't, what do we tend to do? Nothing. And that's the worst. And as brothers and sisters in Christ, let's make this commitment to, hey, if there's something that we have hurt each other, the experience, let's go and say, hey, I want to come directly to you. If I'm having a hard time trusting, I want you to know I'm coming directly to you. Number 4, when I'm convinced I will not be able to deliver on a promise, because we're all, we're all imperfect, I'm going to tell you ahead of time. Okay? Why don't we do that with each other? Wouldn't that be great with husbands and wives? Is to let each other know, like, hey, I may not be able, I thought I was going to be home by 6, but it looks like it might be 6:30, 7 o'clock, whatever. If we let, doesn't that take some stress and tension off? And isn't that really a loving way to say, hey, I want you to believe. I want you to be able to trust and to really confirm that. When I realize I'm about to create a gap, and I've created plenty of gaps in every one of my relationships, my commitment, you say, hey, I'm going to come to you ahead of time. You're not going to be sitting there looking at your watch wondering what's going to happen here. I'm going to let you know. And the last one, I thought this was good. When you confront me about the gaps I've created, I'll tell you the truth. It's easier than it sounds. I mean, it sounds easier than it is. I flip that. I mean, right? It sounds easy, but it's not. I'm just going to tell you ahead of time. I'm going to tell you the truth. Now, I know that there are some extreme situations. I live in the world, too. And just so you know, nobody calls me or calls the church and says, hey, just wanted to let you know I'm doing great. Everything's wonderful. Just wanted to let you know. People don't call me for that, all right? It's usually some, there's usually a problem. But here's what I want you to know. Not, you know, that's not our world. So understand, I know there's extreme situations. I realize that, and I, you know, help many people through those. But let me say this. Most people, I think you'll agree, most people want to be trusted. They do. Now, when you're at the end of your rope with someone and you just don't know what else to say, when you look at them and say, I want to trust you, what the average person is feeling is, I want to be trustworthy. When you look at someone who has created a gap a mile wide and you say, what can I do? What can we do so that I can trust you? Let me tell you how powerful this is. Even if you're married, the worst, you know, horrible guy, you know, maybe he's even got a motorcycle hidden somewhere. That's how terrible it is. You know, she's got credit cards you don't know about. Whatever it is. You know, all of these kind, even if it's that, you know, being able to look at that person and say, I want to trust you. That is the most direct route to discovering whether or not they are trustworthy. The best way to discover whether or not someone is trustworthy is to trust them. You see, I'm setting myself up to be hurt. Set myself up for a gap. Going to experience it anyway. Right? Love always trusts. Paul, you got to be crazy. No, he was inspired. The quickest way also, flip side, the quickest way to turn somebody who is trustworthy into someone who is not trustworthy is not to trust them. That's the power of this word, and that's why God put it in his word. And as we wrap up, I want to give you a little exercise. If you're the kind of person who tends to have a difficulty trusting, if you're that kind of person, and it could be that you deserve to have that feeling. It could be in your past, something in your childhood, in a previous marriage, in a previous employer, whatever you think. You know, one day you're going to try this, and you're going to go, wow, he's not such an idiot after all. Try this. I want you to think this through and get somewhere alone. Do this today if you can. Get somewhere alone, nobody else around, where you can safely do this. And I mean, you may have to go into the bathroom, you have to go to your garage, backyard, wherever. Just get someplace alone and just out loud say, you know, there's no place like home. No, don't say that. No, seriously. Tap your heels. And this isn't some kind of new age exercise. I really mean this. Just say, I have a hard time trusting people. I have a hard time trusting people. Wow, I've created some gaps in my life. I've created some gaps with family. I've created some gaps at work. I've created some gaps. I've been doing that with myself with a lie that I've been telling myself. I won't go into all that. We're done with time. Of saying, I'm not going to believe this lie that the devil's telling me. Okay? Don't lie to yourself and say, it doesn't matter. You say it as a prayer. I'm not talking about some kind of weird thing. Okay? But facing the fact that you have a hard time trusting people, because then you'll start to realize and the Lord will bring to mind relationships where you've created some gaps. You'll do what doesn't come natural to you. You're going to do what's not intuitive to you, and you're going to choose to believe the best even though you have a hard time trusting people. God will give you the power to do that. You and I don't have to decide, you know, whether if we have a propensity toward trusting or not. That we don't have to choose based on that. We have the power to put in that gap whatever it wants. And I'm talking about, this is for Christ followers, okay? People who have the Holy Spirit inside them that are listening. For the rest of us, maybe you're a very trusting person. Maybe, you know, maybe you trust strangers, you pick up hitchhikers, you know, everybody, you know. But maybe there's that one person that you have in your life. Many of us could think of one. You say, hey, I'm a trusting person. And I really am. I'm being truthful with you. I am a very trusting person. But I've had those times, we've had those gaps, and you just think, man, what as a Christ follower can I do to break that cycle, to close that gap, break that cycle of mistrust? What does love do? Love believes all things, endures all things, hopes all things. Love always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always persevere. Love bends. What can you do? What can you do to break that cycle of mistrust between you and that other person? It may be time for that conversation. And you may have to say, look, this is awkward. And I don't even know how to handle this. Blame it on me. Say, my pastor messed me up Sunday and he talked about this and now I got to talk to you. I can take it. That's okay. Just don't give him my phone number, but everything else will be fine. Now look, okay, in case you dropped off, you had a little snooze time in the middle of this, I'm going to draw a line, and we've kind of come up with a little phrase every time to describe these apps. Jesus gave us the statement for this. When it comes to trust, Luke 6:31 says this, do to others as you would have them do to you. He said, I thought my mother thought of that. No, that was Jesus, okay? She was just quoting him, yeah. When you create a gap, and I've created, my friends, look, I love you. I have created many gaps between me and my kids, between me and my wife, between me and friends, between me and, I've done it. Coming back to what Jesus says, treat those the way you would want to be treated, you know? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. And that involves the hard app of trust. Let's pray.